There's a lot of tenderness that's coming up in me, just imagining how profound and important this topic is for all of you. It certainly is for me and also our country in general. There's very few places where I go that people aren't longing for a sense of deep self-compassion, a sense of self-savoring, self-knowing, that non-negotiable self-worth. So I would enjoy starting with a remembering. I just call it a remembering. It's just a way to help me ground and to bring my attention and reflection to this moment in terms of some of the work we'll be covering today. I have a series of little vignettes and quotes from John Wellwood's book called Perfect Love, Imperfect Relationships. Love is the recognition of beauty. Each of us longs to know and feel confident in the beauty and goodness that lies within us. What feels most affirming is not just to feel loved, but to feel loved as we are. As we are means in our very being. Deeper than all our personality traits, pains, or confusion, our being is the dynamic open presence that we essentially are. It is what we experience when we feel settled, grounded, and connected with ourselves. Experiencing unconditional love allows us to rest in ourselves and the blissful flow of our aliveness. This is one of the great gifts of human love, this entry that it provides into something even greater than human relatedness. In helping us connect with the radiant aliveness within us, it reveals our essential beauty and power, where we are one with life itself, because we are fully transparent to life. And when life belongs to you and you belong to life, this sets you free from hunger and fear. You experience the essential dignity and nobility of your existence, which does not depend on anyone else's approval or validation. In this deep sense of union with life, you realize that you are not wounded, have never been wounded, and cannot be wounded. So I can imagine over the next 3 weeks exploring a few different things today, really looking at the place of what is self-love and why is it even important? And what might get in the way? What might prevent us from loving ourselves? And then today, focusing on how do we give empathy to that really harsh self-critic that many of us carry around? And how do we start accessing our non-negotiable self-worth? And then in next week's class, to explore that concept that I like to think of an inner beloved. How can I cultivate my inner beloved? How can I access that and nourish that? And then in the third week, look at some of the core beliefs that might get in the way that prevent me from self-care. So I'd like to make this class something that you can engage with and interact and roll up your sleeves. And so I'm going to invite you to answer the question in your small group, what is self-love? Again, the question is, what is self-love? Just brainstorm and see what comes up for you. I would love to hear just some one-liners that people came up with to answer the question, what is self-love?
Opening to all that comes.
Love it. Opening to all that comes. Thank you.
Loving me when I'm not showing up the way I would like to.
Those tough moments. Thank you.
Loving engagement with myself.
Loving engagement with myself. Accepting all. Thank you.
Honoring myself.
Yes, thank you. I love all of those. And I really wanted to hear some of the places that I'm in an exploration all the time about what is this thing we even call self-love and how do we do it and what does it become? So all of those that I heard resonate a lot with me and my orientation, the framework I'm coming from. And I would love to spend probably the next 10 minutes or so talking a little bit about my understanding of self-love, at least how I'm holding it at this point, and some of my journey, and then some of my how-to process to understand and get more connected to that essential place. So I'm grateful for all of those one-liners. They're very similar to mine. Self-love, I'm thinking that it's some sort of orientation for me. It's not necessarily static, but more a direction, an orientation, a framework I want to come from. And it has something to do with being connected to my essence and a celebration of who I am. Knowing and being known by myself. Knowing myself and being known by myself, my essential self. Seeing and being seen by my core self. Anita Moorjani, in her book called Dying to Be Me, she talks about seeing her magnificence. And I really like that framing, our magnificence, it's our birthright. Something about self-love has to do with also seeing myself in you. There's something about seeing our common essence and connection to all of life. And then enjoying and loving that paradox of this unique expression of that life energy that flows through me. So it's both the seeing myself reflected in others and enjoying this unique expression that comes through myself and the unique expression that comes through others. And that certainly leads me to the sense of interdependence. I have a sense that self-love happens within the framework of interdependence. It allows me to increase my capacity to love and care for others. It's something that I like to think of as self-full, that I have full access to the qualities of myself that allow me to live love in the world. I'm full of self, but in a way and in a context that's completely aware of others. So in contrast to what self-love is not, I don't see self-love as wanting my needs valued at anyone else's expense. We often refer to that in our culture as selfish. If somebody's being selfish, this sense that they're valuing their own needs but at the expense of other people's needs. And the flip side of that, which I think is not what self-love is wanting other needs valued at my own expense. And we sometimes in our culture call that selfless. And I'm serving and having the focus and valuing and honoring other people's needs, but not my own. And so I've got those three different paradigms that I'm looking at in that sense, that selfish, meeting my needs at the expense of other people's, selfless, meeting other people's needs at my own, or self-full, where I'm a sense that I'm not independent and separate from people, but in self-full, there's a sense of interdependence. And my own personal journey in this, I sometimes laugh. It's not something that I'm like eager to share with people in the sense that, wow, this has been a great journey, because it's very humbling. And just even to talk about spending a lifetime of really having a sense of pleasing others to buy their love. So I just noticed there's, even after all the work I've done, there's still a little bit of, you know, feeling humble, a little bit of shame coming up that really you spent all those years doing that. And there's lots of compassion that goes along with it too. Just really aware of a culture where there's clear rules of how to act in order to be seen and accepted. It's really connected to survival in many ways. So, yeah, I've had a lifetime of trying to please others to buy their love for a sense of acceptance, and a lifetime of keeping up my own image, I think, in order to buy my own love and to prove my worth, not just to others, but ultimately to myself. Thinking that if I do things that are acceptable and pleased to other people, then I can prove to myself that I matter. And gradually I became more aware of that kind of striving that was going on my part to get the confirmation that I was okay. And I started asking myself if what I was doing was just another way to prove my worth, or was I really doing something that was an authentic strategy to live from my essential nature? So one example of that was I spent about close to 20 years as a classical music conductor. And it was something that I loved doing, and there was a lot of effort that went into it, too, because it was a way for me to be seen. And it was a mixed area. So when this thing we call nonviolent communication came into my world and resonated deeply, and I started moving in the direction to share that with other people, I spent about a year in that process trying to get very honest with myself. Was this another thing I was doing to prove my worth? Or was this a strategy and a plan to help me shed the things about proving my worth and come back and live from a place that was more my essential self? And I want to mention here that I rarely experience a clear line actually distinguishing those two different frameworks, proving my worth or living from my essential self. I find my world is not so black or white, and I often live in a gray zone where both are true at the same time. I both find as a trainer for CNVC that I do frequently come from this place of really expressing what I value and my purpose in the world in ways that I've never done with such fullness before. And I also find those old patterns of judgment and comparison peeping up again and again. So I just start noticing which motivation I'm coming from. But then I'm learning to allow myself to really grieve and feel the pain that when I fall into that place of comparison, judgment, and shame. And I'm also learning to pause and to savor and allow the feelings when I'm living authentically and in integrity. And wow, I'm noticing that feels so good. And I want to notice and allow more of that because I'm starting to build trust in myself when I find that I'm living from a place of more expansiveness and integrity. And then especially in the last few years, I've been learning to offer myself presence. And in the sense that I'm, what many of you said in your one-liners, which I loved, that place of honoring myself, allowing, noticing, being present without judgment. And I've named that presence that I offer myself my inner beloved. I've been very fortunate to have people in my life who have offered me the kind of love where I knew that they could see through all my scars and see my beauty. And so I remember their eyes, their touch, their words that helped me realize my own inner beauty. I think that when we're inspired by someone, it's often because they express certain qualities that are deeply embedded in our own core, that are part of our own essential nature. So I look for the resonance of those qualities in me, and that becomes part of the fabric of my inner beloved. I take the qualities that I love in others, the qualities that have helped reflect my own beauty, and I allow them to be part of my inner beloved, part of the presence that I offer myself, even in the times when I don't enjoy what I'm doing, the times when I feel scared, the times I have judgment toward others or myself. And just try to remember. So part of the ways I've done that, part of the how-to process, I want to share with you this week and the next 2 weeks. One thing that I really love to say before I get started is, I hope you understand I'm speaking from midstream, like without having come close to completing the journey myself. I'm still floundering in the rapids. And this is an ongoing exploration for me. And my understanding just continues to evolve and change. I'm very grateful that you're here on this journey with me because I trust we'll be learning from each other and supporting each other as we go. So a quick overview of the how-to process is I want to look first at the qualities, or sometimes we call them the human needs or the motivators behind all that I say and that I do, and start to see those qualities or needs as really my own essence, as my own life energy, seeing those qualities as my non-negotiable self-worth. And then to realize that every message that I give myself is simply a reminder to remind me of one of those beautiful qualities, to remind me of a piece of my essence. the critical to doing that is I needed to learn to translate, because sometimes the messages I give myself are incredibly harsh. And it's hard to imagine that the intention is really to remind myself of some beautiful quality. So today we'll look at an exercise to do that. And then I learned to celebrate when I moved from, like I acted from my essence. And speaking what seems true for me or making choices that reflect my values or when I'm in a place of self-compassion, really learn to celebrate and savor. And at the end of this class, we'll do a meditation. It's just one of the ways that I use to celebrate. Dark chocolate works great too. Hot baths, hanging out with friends. There's lots and lots of ways to celebrate the things that matter to me. Next week, we'll look at cultivating an inner beloved. And on the third session, start to notice and transform the core beliefs that are blocking self-love that would allow fuller connection and appreciation of life. So at this time, I'd love to open up if you have any questions or you have some comments. And then I would love to continue the exploration and get to some of the practical hands-on exercises.
I guess I am a little bit of the skeptic, because I've said to myself and to others, you know, this judge is so deep and critical and learned, and they're almost automatic with these thoughts that might keep me down, you know, like, you know, or keep me doing the same things, even though I aspire to do some more things with my life. But those thoughts are just there. And, well, they're not even thoughts. They're just like attitudes. They're just so deep. I'm just wondering, it's going to be like a skeptic's question, but when you're in your midstream, do you know any people that are that have reached the end of the stream or close to it and say, yeah, it really is true? You can have a lot of self-love without all this judgment, or is it just so impossible to really deliver ourselves out of it? I appreciate your thoughts.
Yeah, thank you. Really appreciate that. And I love having company in the world of the skeptics, so thank you so much. I love that voice. Yes, I have a lot of compassion for how deeply embedded these thoughts, these attitudes, that's where the core belief work has been incredibly liberating for me, for other people. And I find it such a fluid state. I really like to think of this as a continuum, that maybe there's, you know, there's self-loathing on one side and there's self-love on the other. And I find that it's pretty darn fluid between those two poles at any point in time. And so what I'm looking for is some choice about which end of the pole I gravitate toward. And so when I find myself more in the self-loathing, I've got some processes here that I look at to get more connected to self-compassion, self-care. And I certainly do see some people who have a lot of facility in being able to navigate those. And it gives me tons of inspiration and hope. And I certainly see myself much of the time in a very different place than I was 10 years ago. So that gives me hope as well. And then sometimes I, you know, show up with a completely unable to get out of it. And that's where I so value community, that it can help support me and reflect back some of my beauty until I can remember where it is. So thank you.
Thank you.
And I think we've got one other hand. So let's take that one question and then jump into an exercise.
Yeah, I just wanted to appreciate what you said about feeling the shame or the regret about spending so much time in my life pleasing other people. And when you said that, it just gave me a sense of, oh, I'm not alone.
Yay, companionship there, partnership, huh? Thank you. I'm going to invite going back into pairs again, and two questions to kind of look at. And one question would be, what prevents you from loving yourself? Really, what's going on? What stops you from loving yourself? And then if you could also look at, what specific messages do you say to yourself in your harshest moments? So what prevents you from loving yourself in general? And then what are the specific things you say, or even specific things that you do when you're harshest to yourself? So those two things. I'm hoping all of you have a phrase or two or something specific that you say or do in your kind of worst moments towards yourself, so that we can take those directly into an exercise. And I'm guessing some of you may have a handout called How to Deal with Ourselves When We Are Less Than Perfect, and some of you may not. You don't need to have it. I'll make sure I talk about everything on the handout in case you don't have it in front of you. So How We Deal With Ourselves When We Are Less Than Perfect was a title that the beloved Marshall Rosenberg used. It was one of the first things I heard from him when I first came into this world of nonviolent communication. And it so struck me how we tend to talk to ourselves. My first thought was, oh, my kids have got to learn this. And then, of course, I started laughing because I've got to learn this, particularly if there's any hope of my kids growing up in that world. So I have so much gratitude and respect for Marshall's work. And the handout that I've given you is really directly from what I learned from him. There's nothing original on it. That's mine. It's an exercise in empathic presence for yourself. And there's a quote by Parker Palmer that I enjoy that reminds me of some of those one-liners that some of you talked about, so I'm going to read it. Honoring the soul will have outcomes for our work in the world. But if we want those outcomes to occur, we must approach the soul for no reason other than to honor it, making no effort to direct or demand certain outcomes. In other words, empathic presence, just being with the feelings that are coming up, and being with the certain things that we call needs sometimes in this work, being with what's important underneath the feelings, what matters to us in life, being with those essential qualities, those values, and being with without judgment or blame or any story attached to it. So let me walk you through this exercise, Marshall's exercise, on how to deal with ourselves when we're less than perfect. It's something that we call like a self-empathy exercise. And what I enjoy particularly about this one is there's a fullness to it that I want to empathize both with the needs or the things that were important to me that I was not able to satisfy in the moment. And I also want to empathize with the needs that I was trying to meet when I did what I did. When I can fully empathize with the needs that I was trying to meet in any given moment, that's when self-forgiveness starts. And that's when I can start to have compassion for myself. Realizing that my motivation, my intention for doing something that I was horrified that I did or said, that the intention was really in service to something beautiful. And I remember working at a woman's prison, and one woman said, Kathleen, when you said that behind everything we say or do, that we're trying to meet a beautiful need, that was the first baby step I've ever had towards self-forgiveness. So I really honor and value this exercise. So I'm going to start at the beginning, and the very first thing is to choose a stimulus. So something that somebody said, or that you said, or that you did. Usually it's a one or two liner. Take away the evaluation, the story from it. And so I'm going to give you an example. So a stimulus that just happened for me was in a close community that I'm part of. A person said something about another person who was not there, and I nodded and listened. So it seems pretty neutral. But step two is what I then said to myself about what I did. That this is just my thoughts, my thinking, my harsh critic voice. And I encourage you when you're doing this one to just let it fly. Well, here's what I said to myself. Oh, Kathleen, you don't even have the courage to be honest. You talk a good line, but you don't have any integrity. You can't even speak up now to say that you're uncomfortable talking about someone else when they're not around. What a loser. You're never going to learn. So in step three, I want to go into mourning. And here I want to make a distinction between mourning and blaming. Blaming is when I stay with the paradigm that somebody's right and somebody's wrong. And I either blame myself harshly that somehow I'm not good enough or I'm not bad, or I try to blame somebody else that they're a jerk. In that place of blame, it's hard to get learning and connection and healing. So I want to choose something that I call mourning instead. And mourning is when I get really, really clear of what those underlying needs were, what the thing is that I value. And then I can go into some deep regret and mourning that what I was hoping for I wasn't able to obtain. And when I'm in that place, it can be a very deep pain. but it really connected to the life of what's important underneath it. And in that place, I can learn to make different choices. So step three is mourning. So I first want to look at the needs that were not satisfied by what I did. And so, again, what I did when somebody spoke about somebody else's, I just nodded and listened. And the needs that were not satisfied was protection and care for the other person who was being spoken about. I wasn't satisfying my need for integrity to really say what was truly going on for me. And I wasn't able to influence the community to increase the awareness of how we care for each other. And I didn't have the level of self-expression I wanted. And I also prevented myself from being known and seen in that community for really who I was. And if I just sit with the feelings that come up for that, there's a sadness, there's a discouragement that comes up. Yeah, a real longing, kind of an ache to think that maybe someone wasn't held with care and I didn't step in and do anything about it, because I really want everyone seen for their humanity. And then I want to look at the needs that I was trying to satisfy by doing what I did, by just nodding and listening. I think I really wanted connection with the speaker. And I wanted the speaker to experience presence and belonging and safety, to be able to know that there's a place that the speaker can express and to be seen for their intentions. And I also really wanted harmony, and I wasn't trusting that if I spoke up, the speaker would have a sense of being seen and known. I didn't trust that I could have the sort of connection I wanted. I didn't trust I could maintain harmony. So I made my choice motivated by those needs. And when I think about that, I feel a lot more compassion toward myself, realizing that those were beautiful needs I was trying to meet. Step number four is I want to move into the learning phase. So what could I have done differently? I could have given empathy to the speaker for the speaker's needs behind speaking about someone when they weren't there. And I did that, and that part felt good. But then what I didn't do, which I could do next time, is I could ask if he or she has a space to hear me about what's coming up for me. And I could have talked about my discomfort not knowing really how to care for someone when they're not present to care for themselves. And I could have made a request to the speaker if, when they hear me say I'm uncomfortable, if they were hearing blame from me, because I'm really wanting just more connection and understanding. I could have made a request to hear if the speaker would have been willing to tell me what I could have said when I started to feel uncomfortable that would let them know that I still cared about them. And I also wanted to protect the person that they were speaking about. I could have had an exploration with that person. And then sometimes the fifth thing that I have on the handout is a sense of speed learning by keeping a jackal book. So these things come up for me several times during the day. So I might just note down a stimulus or situation where I did something that I didn't feel great about. And then later I could go back and journal, you know, what were the needs that were unmet? What were the needs I was trying to meet? My good reasons for doing it. And then learn about what alternatives I could come up next time to try to meet both needs. The sixth thing I have on the handout is self-empathy is seeing truth of what the needs are that are motivating our actions. It's not looking at the world through rose-colored glasses. Just being honest with myself so I can really learn in ways that help me find a different strategy next time. So I'd love to find out if anybody has questions about the process. And then we have time to walk one person through it. So I'd be curious first to see if there's anybody who has questions about the process.
I'm wondering how the process works when it's not something I've done, it's something that I honestly can't change. My most painful blurt to myself is, you're really ugly. I don't know if this process works with that.
I'm wondering if you would want to go through that process with me now. I'm not seeing any other hands up, and I don't want to put you on the spot. I want you to really be a choice.
Well, I'd be happy to if you think it will serve others.
Yeah, I love exploring all the possibilities. So, yeah, let's do that if you're willing.
I'm very willing. I'd love to release.
Yeah, okay, so it sounds like you've already given me the stimulus, what it is that you say to yourself. And so could you say that one more time?
You are really ugly.
And what do you tell yourself about yourself when you say that?
Well,
what other thoughts are in there?
Just now, I know that the rest of it is, you're really ugly and no one will ever love you. You're not acceptable. Get out of here. Go away.
Yeah, and at this point, just invite you to start feeling into what it feels like when you tell yourself that. And then, are there any unmet needs that you experience when you tell yourself that?
Pretty much all of them. Fear, and hope, love, and acceptance, and belonging, and inclusion, mattering.
Yeah, really longing for that care, acceptance, love, some sense of hope that there's a place for belonging, sense of knowing your own worth and value. Now I'm going to ask you to maybe stretch a little bit, and I'm curious what needs that voice is trying to meet by saying you are really ugly. What needs is that voice within yourself trying to meet for you?
It's trying to protect me from shame of going out in public.
It's really wanting to protect you from shame, to protect that sense of care for yourself. To want you to know the nurturing and love. And freedom from pain, freedom from shame.
Yeah, I would love that. Freedom of shame, nurturing, freedom from pain.
Yeah. Just stay with that. Notice the feelings that come up when you realize that those voices that seem so harsh, that tell you you're really ugly, no one will ever love you, go away, that underneath this tragic way of getting there, that the motive is really somehow to protect you, to give you some freedom from painful experiences, to give you more a sense of nurturing, a sense of love, a sense of care. Doing that by having you stay alone, maybe.
There's another question coming up for me right now, is that I don't hear this as a voice. I hear this as the truth.
Yeah, it seems so powerful and so vivid and so alive that it just matches your experience somehow, that it's really painful. There's been a lot of ways that somehow, almost in that, when you say it's the truth, that in some ways those needs have been met somehow by staying away from public, that there has been part of that strategy that has protected you somehow. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think so. I think it's more that I just believe this is the truth, and there aren't really any needs that voice is trying to provide for me except, well, maybe to tell me the truth,
To orient you to reality, is that what you said?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Something that you're really valuing about honesty, about maybe congruency with your world and your experiences, something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, my body feels more relaxed hearing that.
Yeah, so stay with that a little bit and just notice and just breathe in that you really value honesty in this world. It's one of things that you treasure. Value some sense of congruency, that's important to you.
Yeah.
So one way, one strategy that you use to get that is to tell yourself those messages. And underneath it, it's really a search for honesty, maybe shared reality, something like that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I'm wondering how you're feeling right now.
Much more relaxed, a little bit open and curious.
Cool. So let's look at, sounds like those voices, you know, they're really attempting to, I'm going to keep calling them voices because I want to make a little distinction here between agreeing with those judgments and really seeing what the judgments are trying to serve. So those messages, you know, whether you believe them or not, I just, that they're really wanting so many things for you. Honesty, congruency, freedom from shame, to have a sense of love and nurturing in some way. And those voices, there's also some unmet needs attached to them, really giving you that experience of acceptance and belonging and inclusion and mattering, love. So stick with the curiosity that's coming up in you, and I'm wondering if there's any kind of request that you can make, any kind of learning that you might make of yourself to look for a different strategy to both allow yourself to have nurturing and love and protection and honesty and also acceptance and belonging.
You're asking me to find a strategy that...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm wondering if there's a strategy that can... Right now, it sounds like you have a strategy that meets some needs, but at the expense of others. And I'm wondering if there's something that, some expansion of the strategy of telling yourself those messages that will actually allow you to experience more of the very things that you're hoping to experience. And this could even be like a request of yourself right now. It could be to give appreciation to yourself for being a champion or a torchbearer in this world, for honesty, for love, for nurturing.
Yeah, there's something coming up in me that I've never, ever considered before is to make a relationship with this voice that thinks it's telling me the truth, get to know it better, and instead of the overwhelmed by it, I meet it on a plane of curiosity and get to know it. I'm not exactly sure. I think I can do that, like in my, have a journal conversation or play it out with somebody else.
Wow, I love that because your voice has some beautiful things it's saying. Just in really hard to hear ways, really hard to hear ways, yeah? So I want to make sure that this can really happen for you. So let me help you get really specific and concrete. So I love that building that relationship with that voice. And I love the idea of journaling. And do you have a specific way to journal that you imagine could help you really hear and have a two-way conversation with that voice? Both the hearing, oh, yeah, you're wanting these things in my life, and, boy, I'm having a hard time getting it the way that you're talking to me. So I'm wondering, can we use some different language when you want me to remember to protect myself? Or can you use some different words? Or how about if we go try this? Do you have a journal processing that you can imagine will give you a two-way conversation with that voice?
Well, I love all your suggestions. I don't have such a, you know, organized, formalized practice. I kind of do stream of consciousness journaling, and sometimes it does break into a dialogue with the younger parts of myself. This one's really a tough one.
Yeah, so I love the idea of journaling. One other option is to just actually use this exercise, and particularly that middle section. You know, what's it like? What am I trying to meet? How do I really feel when I'm not able to get those needs met? Just to continue to explore. Do you have somebody that I would call like an empathy buddy or somebody that you could say, wow, I'm exploring what this voice means to me, and would you be willing to listen and explore that with me? Is there one other person in your life that you could do that with?
Yeah, I think so.
And let's put a little time frame on this, too. Do you imagine both of those could happen within, say, the next week?
Yeah, I think so. Not quite sure about the empathy.
So maybe within the next week, setting up a time when that could happen.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, great. Yeah, and the reason I'm spending time on this is that for me, once I know what direction I want to head, if I don't have really specific concrete steps that are doable positive actions and grounded in time and space and with particular people, then it's likely that what I want is going to turn into a wish rather than a doable request. And it sounds like you have something really concrete to move forward with now. And I'm just wondering how you're feeling in this moment and if you'd also be willing to open it up to hear a couple comments from other people. That'll be completely up to you. Love to hear your experience first.
And I'm fine opening it up. I'd like to know if, you know, this is me, anybody else is me. I'm a little nervous about that.
Okay, so let's make that the first request. If this conversation has met anybody's needs, any of them, but I'm imagining like learning, growth, connection, tenderness, then go ahead and push 5 on your keypad. And I'm seeing lots of 5s. I'm seeing lots of 5s showing up from the whole class. There you go.
Thank you. Anything else
that you'd like to hear back from the group?
Oh, you know, if people are inspired to share something, shared reality or things like that, yeah, I'm happy to hear. I could just comment, I'm really grateful. This is such an old thing. You can tell it's like petrified to me, and it's an opening for me to actually not just accept this as reality, but as a voice commenting, giving their opinion or commenting mm-hmm. in a way that I actually have some life around it.
Yeah. Great. You've just disassociated yourself from that a little bit. And, yeah, that breathing room for the curiosity. At the point that you had that, I heard you talk about curiosity was coming up. And I also want to say that in our third class, we're going to go through the core belief process, which is where you really take these things like, I really believe this is true, and then transform those.
Well, I already feel much more relaxed. And I also appreciate the real guidance around getting specific doable strategies in a time frame because I'm not good at that at all.
There you go. Great. So I'm thinking we could have time for maybe 2 or 3 questions, and then I would love to leave people with a couple, I want to say, exercise or daily practices. Great. So let's take questions at this point, and then we'll close out the class, and then I'll stay on for a few more questions afterwards.
When I heard the previous talker who did her work say, yeah, I like to make a connection with a truth-telling voice, I loved it because it felt good because it was very real for me, very authentic, that there was no skipping over. It was starting where it is. She thinks that this voice is telling the truth, so she starts with that, and I love that. And then open to hear other truths than you are ugly. Right.
Sounds like the authenticity and the movement and the
honesty and the openness. Okay. The authenticity that goes with being exactly where she is. She thinks that his voice tells the truth, so that's where she starts. I love that. But this didn't get sugar-coated or skipped.
Yeah, thank you. For emphasizing that. Because really, when we're in pain, of course our opinions are fact. They absolutely seem like that. That's why they're so hard to shift out of sometimes.
And it's so tempting to be positive at all costs and to say, oh, but she's not really telling the truth. So she didn't skip. And I like it. Honesty and authenticity are very big for me. I felt uplifted when she said that.
Great. Thank you so much.
I was so enjoying the difference in her voice when she first started talking and after she had worked with you. Just the voice was so different, and it was very tender and connecting, and I mean, awe with your capacity to stay with exactly what is. That was very inspiring to watch. Thank you.
I'm curious how that was for you to hear, that your voice was very tender and connecting for people to listen to.
Oh, it definitely matches my reality, because in the beginning, I mean, my throat even hurts to talk with that kind of pain, and now I feel very relaxed in my throat and much more comfortable. So, yeah, I noticed it too.
And I just feeling the tenderness of the care in Genevieve's voice, that I'm wondering if even those values of love and acceptance and belonging and connection are being met right now.
Thanks for pointing that out. Wow, yeah. Yeah, I'm drinking that in.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, first of all, for sharing that. I think that's very courageous. I don't want to lessen that statement by saying that we have all experienced that at some point, but I believe that to be true. When I hear that statement coming from myself to me, I realize that I'm living in an environment, at least I believe I'm living in an environment, where my value is based upon my appearance. And I wonder if when she hears I am ugly, if she feels that she is being valued according to her appearance, if that is the environment in which she lives.
You know, I think, and thank you very much for the question, and I think that I do, but it's almost like so petrified and so young in me that I'm not sure I'd even recognize about my worth related to my appearance. But I'm really moving into a time where I can better consider that. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing all that.
Yeah, I'm touched.
Kathleen, I was wondering when you were saying one of the steps where it says we need to look at what our needs are and what are we valuing, what are we needing. I suspect that I'm not always able to really get clear. It seems too simple, you know, to really get at what my value was. How can we, what can help you, help me understand that I'm really conscious what the real value is going on in me? Because I have so many layers of maybe even judgments about, oh, I can't really think that or value that because,
yeah.
So.
It can't be that,
you know,
need, because only some people have that need, yeah. I love the question, and the first thing that comes up is, it's so easy to say we all have these values all the time, and it's so hard to start to develop the awareness and the fluency to do a couple of different layers. One is to really identify it, what the value or the need is, and the other one is to really start to connect and feel the energy and embody it. So one thing that I will often use kind of visual or tactile aids, so my favorite is like the Grok cards or Sura Heart games, where you actually, you can make them out of index cards. Like just put one need on a card and then I just go through the pile and I put them out ahead of me. And I listen to my body, because when there's a need like, oh, that's it, there's just kind of this thud that happens in my stomach. And so get a needs list, which is at the back of Marshall's books. There's needs list on the NBC Academy website. There's worldempathy.org, which I believe has lists of needs in 40 different languages.
I guess the truth is, though, like somebody just pointed out to me, I've been doing NVC for a few years and sporadically, you know, I'm judging myself now that I didn't really study it like a Bible. You know, I mean, really, really study really hard. I went at it, especially when I'm feeling bad, turn to the book, where can I get some help, you know, not really practicing on any kind of routine. But somebody just pointed out to me the need to be seen. And it took me a long time to really see, yeah, that's a real human thing. And it had to be, it finally came up in a situation with me because I play guitar and I like that tension of playing out in public. And then this person said to me, well, I entered my field of self-help so I could be seen by my clients. That jumped out to me like, wow. You know, like, well, then I could say, okay, this is a universal need. But it took so long to really see this. And what I'm saying is, you know, there can be the list of needs. But for me to really get what that need really means, you know, I mean, I hate to seem like I'm being intellectual about it from an analytical
perspective. Well, no, I actually appreciate the intellectual framing. And so another strategy I use is I might say, okay, if I had respect, then what would I have? Well, then I might have a sense of worth. Well, if I had a sense of worth, what would I have? Well, then I would have a sense of mattering in the world. And so if I ask myself, you know, whatever need pops up first, ask myself if I had that, then what would I have? And it'll bring up another layer of need.
Okay.
As you go on.
I'll try that.
That's one strategy. Yeah. Another strategy that I'd actually like to close with here is the going into a slight needs meditation. So based on that last question, too, is I would love to know that you have some daily practices to work with this week. So do this exercise a couple of times. Or when the harsh critic comes up, just write down those thoughts and give empathic guesses in the moment if you can. Find some inspiration and readings that you enjoy. And then I'm going to offer a very short 2-minute needs meditation. And I would invite you to expand it as long as you want. So I'm going to invite you at this moment to take a breath and to choose one of the needs that came up when you think about your own process, what's underneath some of those messages. Could be that need to matter, just the need for freedom from shame, the need for peace, a rest. Notice where that lies in your body. Maybe it's something that you feel warmth in your stomach, or maybe there's some sensations in your throat or your solar plex. Just notice the energy of that need, and they all feel different. The energy of courage might be in your body and have a different sensation than the energy of peace, the energy of safety. So whatever that is, notice that energy and just breathe into it. And get to know that quality intimately. Your best friend. Let it spread out from that one place to all other places in your body. And notice all the places that that need might show up in your life. The ways, big and small, that you might seek for it, look for it, embody it. And just harness the power of that quality that lives in you. And finally, celebrate yourself. Celebrate that that quality is moving through your essential self, part of your non-negotiable self-worth, part of your core, and celebrate that that is what you bring to the world. It's there, even if you don't have the capacity to live it out as much as you want. Just notice that energy is still alive in you. It's something you offer. And then as you come back to awareness of your surroundings, take that energy with you. Find a way to remember it and check back in on it an hour from now. Celebrate it and savor it. And even just taking a couple minutes whenever you notice there's an important quality coming up for you, just savor it in that way by tending to it as a great, delicious, wonderful friend. And so this will close the official part of the call, and I'm going to stay on. And if anybody else has a question, feel free to put one up if you're staying, and I look forward to talking with the rest of you next week.
It wasn't so much a question, but it was more an aha that came up for me. It has to do with believing the thought, the belief, which is something that I've been exploring for some time. And there was something that I heard about that this voice is congruent and makes sense with, for me, what I was told. Mm-hmm. And so this idea of believing, it's like, oh, yeah, because it makes sense. And so it's this longing for my world to make sense. And I'm imagining, as I say this, that I am experiencing that there's this fear when my world doesn't make sense. So definitely that's something that I want to just explore more. And the other piece was to build a relationship with the voice. And there was such beauty and tenderness in that idea of building a relationship with the voice. And when you mentioned journaling, what came to mind for me was, with the help of an empathy buddy, is to do an intermediation and actually have that facilitated dialogue with
beautiful
those parts, allowing for them to be heard and to help them connect with the needs and find that mutual, those strategies or those ways that they can come together. That's what came up for me, and I'm extremely grateful for this piece.
Sweet. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Kathleen, can I talk? For me, the differentiating between to be seen and to be exposed is essential. To the experience of being exposed comes from me either experiencing shame or anticipating shame. While being seen is being loved. I wanted to share that with the group because it's so important to me.
Sweet. Yeah, thank you. It looks like there aren't any other hands up. Thank you. Take care, everyone.